Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We're making great progress in getting the $30 billion in disaster and emergency relief out the door.
Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins speaking Friday at the 101st USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum. That relief package authorized by Congress last year includes $10 billion for economic relief for farmers and another $20 billion in disaster relief. The secretary recognizes the timing of payment allocations, with producers currently making planting decisions.
The last thing ag producers need is to have to wait again on the federal government. So my commitment is that we are hopefully moving at light speed.
Payments must be issued by no later than March 21st. And according to Secretary Rollins,
we've already got the process in place and are moving. Hopefully we are able to beat that deadline.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
This is Agriculture Today.
I've now been on the job just over 2 weeks.
New Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins at Commodity Classic.
Been to 5 or 6 states now, I think, talked to hundreds and hundreds of our farmers and ranchers. We've already released some pretty major plans, made some big announcements. I'm sure a lot of you have tracked that. But there's a lot more coming. We're moving on Trump time. That some of you may have seen. We've moved very quickly, but it's the honor of a lifetime to be in this role.
When she says ag is in trouble, what does she mean?
Clearly, there are a lot of factors that go into this, but when you've got a $49 billion trade deficit, that is devastating to our American farmers and ranchers. $49 billion. I think on Friday it was $45 billion, and I think some new numbers have since come out. When the cost of inputs went up 30% just in the last 4 or 5 years, I mean, how do any of our farmers make any money when the cost of inputs go up 30%, your trade deficit increases $49 billion now, and then you have a whole host of regulations that have been layered on over and over and over again. So there are a lot of factors. We are attacking it from all sides, putting together the plan that can hopefully begin to roll that back. I am planning to very aggressively, with President Trump's permission, go out into the world and look to expand our markets and also make capital easier, especially for our younger farmers, as we begin to build, hopefully, the next generation of our leaders in agriculture.
She also participated in the first cabinet meeting.
It was a great day. I think this was last Wednesday. It was our very first cabinet meeting. Sitting in that room where Abraham Lincoln once sat with his cabinet, deciding the future of America and standing up for what was right. Sitting in that same room where, you know, some of our later founding fathers, but had continued to be leadership, that it wasn't built at the very beginning of the country, but soon after. And some of the most important decisions were made in that room with various members of American leadership for presidents from different times throughout our country's history. So sitting in there, I was a staffer the last time as President Trump's domestic policy chief, but this time actually sitting at the table was truly an overwhelming and surreal experience, but also the greatest blessing. At the same time, understanding what's at stake and how we really will make America great again. For me, it is making agriculture great again. And you're referencing Secretary Bobby Kennedy. Secretary Kennedy and I have already begun building a strong relationship, a great, hopefully, partnership where we can work together, where we begin to move forward. And perhaps I can spend a little time making sure that he understands that some of the things maybe that he has been told or believed or has read isn't entirely accurate, and the importance of ensuring that our farmers and our ranchers and that really America understands the importance of things like pesticides and others to ensure that we are able to continue to feed America and, frankly, to feed the world. I feel confident. I feel very, very confident. I'm very encouraged that as we work to make America healthy again, we will be able to do it in a very intentional way that not only doesn't compromise our farmers and our ranchers and our ag community, but actually helps to elevate and make more prosperous than ever before. I know that's where President Trump stands, and I, of course, stand along with him to effectuate that vision.
And on tariffs?
Everything is on the table right now, everything. I know that President Trump, whom I speak with regularly, realizes the state of the farm economy in this country. The last time I know he pushed Secretary Perdue to ensure that we were able to make whole, or at least as perfect as, obviously it was imperfect, but as best as we could, some of those, and hopefully most of those, if not all, who had been hurt. But again, everything is on the table. We're building the team at USDA to ensure that we have the structure and the plan in place to allow us to move very quickly. I'll be talking about this in my speech in just a minute.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So if we look at this marketing triangle, marketing, technology, economics, I want to talk about economics for a moment. And that really is the price of cotton relative to other fibers.
Mark Misura is Senior Vice President, Global Supply Chain Marketing for Cotton Incorporated.
While cotton prices are not great right now, compared to polyester, cotton prices are actually in a pretty difficult position. Take a look at this chart. And what I want you to focus on in this chart is the black line with the arrow and the number one. What that means is anything above the one shows that the ratio of cotton to polyester price is greater than one, meaning cotton is more expensive than polyester. If cotton prices are less expensive than polyester, they'd be below that black line. If they were the same as polyester, of course, they'd be on the line, the number one black line. But here's what we see in the last 12 months. If you look at the price of cotton relative to polyester, the Chinese price relative to the Chinese polyester price, you can see that cotton is actually almost twice as much as the price of polyester inside China. And you have to remember, even with all the changes with China that are going on, China is still the largest textile manufacturer in the world. So cotton is at a price disadvantage in that market. If we look at the yellow line, that's India. That's the price of cotton in India relative to the price of polyester in India. And you can see here, cotton is about 50% more expensive than polyester. And even in Pakistan, a major cotton producer, compared to the domestic polyester price, you can also see that the green line is above that black line. The red line in this picture, the second one from the top, is the A index, and that's basically the best proxy or indicator of a world price for cotton. And if you look at the world price for cotton relative to the price of Chinese polyester, the dominant polyester in the world market, you can see that even in the latest data point for January 2025, cotton prices are about 60% higher than polyester. So the message here is that while cotton prices are not great in the market, absolutely we are at a disadvantage in the economics corner of this triangle. And at Cotton Incorporated, and with the Cotton Research and Promotion Program, we really can't affect the world price for cotton. What we can do, though, is make sure that we can strengthen the ability to market cotton at the other parts of the triangle. So if we're at a disadvantage on cost, and we never, ever want to go in and say, well, buy us, we're the cheapest fiber. That's not the way we market cotton. We never do that. We want to say, well, cotton may cost more, but here are the other reasons, the other things you as a brand, retailer, or clothing designer need to be aware of. And here are the reasons why cotton should still be the choice. There are marketing reasons, there are technology reasons, there are sustainability reasons. So a lot of what we do at Cotton Incorporated is push this choice and try and make it favorable for cotton, even when we're disadvantaged in the economic part of this marketing triangle.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Presidential travel. This was one of the Democrats was going after President Trump. Okay, all the presidential travel was like $350 billion. So you got an hour, 0.4.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert on ideas people have for balancing the budget. He says it's not quite as easy as you think.
Yep, about an hour, 0.4. So, you know, less than 2 hours for an entire year's worth of borrowing. Let's have one or two more fun just because I have them done. Department of Education salaries. Let's just get rid of the Department of Education salaries. Yay! You covered 9 hours of borrowing. Okay, have another one. Emergency services for undocumented. These are people here illegally. They walk into hospitals. They get a federal subsidy. Okay, let's make it so it just becomes uncompensated care at the hospital. Fine. You covered 9 hours of borrowing for an entire year. The reality of it, it's not these crazy little trite things. Yes, they're problems. And there may be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars out there, which we need to crush and get rid of. We're going to borrow about $2.3 trillion this year. And in 10 years, that number is up dramatically. And it's demographics. If you look at the 30-year data, everything that's in the federal budget except Medicare and Social Security actually is designed to grow slower than tax receipts. We model that in 30 years, we'll have about $9 trillion surplus, as we had counted. It grows slower than tax receipts. Medicare and Social Security, my math is actually much more dour, but this board is like a year and a half, 2 years old. It's probably about $116 trillion in spend and interest. We can make this work. You can do this without cutting our brothers and sisters' benefits. But you got to be willing to think disruptively. You got to be willing to think creatively. You got to be willing to think morally. You got to be willing to think of how do we modernize the world around us. What would happen if you could change the cost of delivering services to our brothers and sisters by getting rid of the archaic designs of many of these programs? Look, my 2-year-old is somewhere in the back, and yes, I have a 2-year-old. My wife's exactly my age, and we adopted a little girl years ago, and same birth mom, the phone rang, so I have a little person. When my 2-year-old, and I've said this repeatedly, but I'm trying to have it break through. Is there anyone out there that thinks morally? When my 2-year-old is basically 22, 23 years old, every U.S. tax has to be doubled just to maintain baseline services. The math is very clear, and it's left math, right math. Every economist who's honest basically says, my kids, your grandkids, are going to be part of the first generation to actually be poorer than their parents and grandparents. That's not America. This was the country of aspiration. We were the ones that we always knew we were leaving the next generation an opportunity to be more prosperous. And it can be that way. But it can only be that way if this place stops acting like intellectual children. The bedwetting. I'm sorry, I take that back, Mr. Speaker. The fear, just the fear of going home and explaining to our constituents the truth.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
My goal is to ensure that our farmers and ranchers not just face more severe and dire consequences than what they are already facing, and that hopefully we can turn that around quickly, but that we move into a new era of prosperity for those producers and for our ag community.
Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins at Commodity Classic.
Clearly, everything is on the table in terms of right-sizing our government, and I think we've all seen that. But I've also seen a real willingness from those outside of USDA as we go to them and circle back and say, you know, maybe this needs to be preserved, or maybe we even need to expand this. The egg plan that I rolled out, the avian flu plan that I rolled out last week at the White House is a great example of that. Just ensuring that our government is as intentional and that as we right-size, that we're serving the very people that we're called to serve, and that overwhelmingly, I would argue, voted for and supported President Trump moving into the November election. And those that overwhelmingly supported him, the most overwhelming support came from this community. And the president realizes that. And so I think rest assured that hopefully those decisions are made with that in mind.
But it appears as though conservation has gotten caught up in cuts.
Listen, our farmers are the original conservationists. There's no doubt about that. Our revolution was fought by farmers 250 years ago. They are the best purveyors and preservationists of the land that we are looking at everything line by line by line. Our chief of staff is the incredible Kaylee Buller. She is here. She's really leading that effort. And I feel confident that as we look to right size the USDA and all of the agencies across the government, as we look to realign the agency to better serve our farmers and our ranchers, as we look to move out things like diversity, equity, and inclusion and progressive, quote, progressive ideals in terms of how we move money out, those days are over. Now we look to really focus on those that are truly feeding this country and the world.
But there's been a lack of trade.
I just was talking to some producers before I walked in here. I think it is no surprise to anyone in this room that the pace at which President Trump is currently meeting with world leaders, some of those meetings go better than others, as we saw on Friday. But I think as we see that, for me personally, and I hope for the audience that you all represent and why you're here, you hopefully are encouraged that while we're entering probably some tense trade negotiation moments and days and perhaps weeks and maybe even months, that the place of President Trump, Vice President Vance, and America in the world, I believe, is strengthening every day. And I do think that is going to give us some really good opportunity to strike some of these deals to ensure that we are expanding that market access. So there are so many different pieces on the chess board, thank you, that are being moved around right now. And it is a bit of a game of three-dimensional chess. But having said that, I believe so sincerely that President Trump has such a good team of people that are extremely aggressive, very intentional, that work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I as being one of them, President Trump being sort of the key 24/7 day a week, but the rest of us are called to do that as well within our different lanes. And so I am encouraged. I hope to begin making trade trips very soon across the world. I've already begun conversations with several potential key significant trading partners that I think will make a huge difference to our farmers and ranchers back home.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So we can inspire companies, but we want to complete the deal. And there are a couple ways that we can actually secure, we can guarantee the use of cotton in products.
Mark Masura is Senior Vice President, Global Supply Chain Marketing for Cotton Incorporated.
One of those is through our technologies, and another way is through our Seal of Cotton licensing program. When it comes to technologies, if you think back to the marketing triangle, we have marketing reasons, economic reasons, and technical performance reasons. So if we're not competitive with our other fibers on in terms of economics, we've got to find other parts of that marketing triangle where cotton does have a competitive advantage. And we can do that in things like technology. So we have a suite of technologies like trans-dry, wicking windows, pure press, natural stress, tough cotton, and storm cotton. And these types of technologies offer brands or retailers a way to enhance their product, offer engineered value, if you will, to their customer. For each one of these technologies, Cotton Incorporated has in place a contract, a legal agreement with that brand or retailer. That agreement allows them to use Cotton Incorporated's intellectual property, our license to them to use these technologies. In exchange for that, they agree in a contract to use a certain minimum amount of cotton in their product. So if you think about it this way, we offer a technology, they offer a guaranteed amount of cotton use. So that's how these technologies can stimulate demand for cotton. And every time we get an adoption, every time you hear something from our colleagues at the Cotton Board about another cotton in the market adoption, you have to understand that there's a contract behind that adoption that guarantees a certain amount of cotton. And we set the percentages of cotton at different levels depending on the products. But basically, these technologies are like bait on a hook. We can get companies to bite, and when they do that, we can get them to commit to using cotton. And when we do that, it all quite often displaces the use of synthetic fiber. So it's advancing the use of cotton in different categories. Now, to get these adoptions, it's sometimes a long and tedious process. And Cotton Incorporated has experts in textiles and technology. We also have many seasoned experts at Cotton Incorporated who worked in many different companies in the industry. And their expertise in manufacturing and problem solving gives Cotton Incorporated a tremendous capability to support the adoption of these technologies. It's not as easy as sending a company a recipe for how to use storm cotton. Sometimes you have to work with their supplier mills, show them how to process it, make sure they get the right quality products that they can bring to market. So you can see in this picture here, many different stages that take place, and Cotton Incorporated supports and assists companies throughout this adoption process. And the end result, something we all hope for, is that brands and retailers will see the value of these performance technologies, and then they will engage with Cotton Incorporated and commit in a contract to introducing programs in cotton and using a minimum amount of cotton, guaranteed minimum.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Did you know a penny actually costs like 3 cents to make? Okay, great. Get rid of them. I don't care.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert says there are ways to save money. It doesn't save the country and its budget from this debt.
A nickel actually costs almost 9 cents. But we actually, you'll be happy, we make monies on dimes and quarters and half dollars. But these are tiny. I'm going to make an argument as I walk through these boards. There's dozens and dozens and dozens of little things. They really don't add up to much. And you should absolutely do them. But if you're the politician, if you're the press, if you're the staff, if you're the talking head on cable television, and you're saying, well, if we just got rid of pennies, we're going to balance the U.S. budget, stop saying insanity. Because one of the problems is when people like us, we go home, we talk to our voters, and they've heard these things saying, you know, if you just got rid of the Department of Education, we'd be fine. And you show them the math, and they look at you like, well, I heard it on television. Please, I beg of you, take this seriously. There is a way to make this work. We just have to do really hard things.
And one of the hardest things to do in Washington, D.C., stop the politics.
You see how the Democrats are acting right now just by data scientists digging through and looking for perversities in the data sets. You would have think there would have been joy. Because those aren't cutting services. Those are finding people who are exploiting you, taking advantage of your country. But because it's being done by President Trump, it must be opposed. How do you fix things? How do you save Social Security? How do you save Medicare? How do you save the future? When it's not a loyal opposition anymore, it's basically anything to burn the place down to take power. And for anyone who's really doesn't have a life and has watched this presentation, I beg of you, get good at the math. Stop making crap up. Because if you get good at the math, it provides us the opportunity to build to have the building blocks to actually produce a solution. There's hopes. There's ways it works. We also have some economic data that basically says we don't do it within about the next 4 years and interest rates start to move against us. We're in for a long, slow rest of the century. And that's worth thinking about because the debt starts piling and piling. Remember, in the previous year, I think we had 3 months where we had to borrow money to pay for our borrowing. For every dime we will take in tax collections this year, we're going to spend $1.36, which is an improvement. Last year was $1.39. Doesn't have to be this way. We just have to start telling the truth. Tell the truth about the math. Tell the truth to each other. And toughen up.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's one part of the five-pronged strategy recently announced by USDA to curb cases of highly pathogenic avian influenza in our nation's poultry and egg-laying flocks, developing innovative approaches. And while some may first think of vaccines in that realm, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins, speaking Friday at the USDA Ag Outlook Forum, added,
also therapeutics and potentially other work we can do regarding immunity and rebuilding
of the flocks and of the nation's egg supply. The Secretary's visit to a Texas egg-laying facility and hosting an avian flu roundtable earlier in the week underscored part of the innovation prong, continued discussions and feedback on potential solutions with stakeholders. This includes scheduled bi-weekly discussions and progress updates. In addition, the strategy
includes significant funding for additional research,
including study of innovation to limit the extent of flock depopulation in HPAI outbreaks. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.